This is Iowa Public Radio River to River. I'm Dean Borg, in for Ben Kiefer. Reapportionment of Iowa's congressional districts reflecting shifting population yields a second district stretching from the Mississippi to central Iowa, from Clinton, Bettendorf, and Davenport to Keokuk and Burlington in the southeast to Ottumwa, Knoxville, Iowa City, and Newton. Incumbent Democrat Dave Loebsack has new territory, being challenged for his congressional seat by John Deere corporate attorney John Archer. We're talking individually with both Archer and Loebsack during the next hour. Iowa's second district congressional candidates, right after the NPR news. Dean Borg with River to River, opening a conversation now with the candidates for Congress in Iowa's second congressional district. We'll be talking with the incumbent congressperson, and that's Dave Loebsack in the second part of the hour. Right now we have with us John Archer, who is a Republican candidate for Iowa's second congressional district. He's a corporate attorney for Deere & Company in the Quad Cities.
Well, that is correct, Dean. Good afternoon.
It's nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
I saw you yesterday. You were at the Mitt Romney rally at the Sodgrass Farm north of Davenport, and you even gave a speech there, and I'll refer to that later, after which Governor Romney suspended campaign rallies for himself because of what the northeastern U.S. is enduring in that hurricane. Now, there's undoubtedly billions of dollars of damage there. We've just been hearing about it on the NPR News. If you're elected to Congress, that's going to be a major question for you. You'll be deciding if and how the federal government pays for rebuilding. How would you vote to spend tax dollars there, and what is the federal obligation?
Right. Well, first and foremost, we have to keep those individuals that have been impacted by Sandy. We just heard 35 deaths from the hurricane. We have to keep them in our thoughts and prayers, and we have to do everything as Americans to come together and help those that have been impacted by this devastating storm. But you're exactly right. We have to provide assistance to those areas that have been hard hit by the hurricane or any natural disaster. We have to make sure that we're using taxpayers' dollars most efficiently and effectively. And that's – I'm going to draw upon my business experience, 12 years at John Deere, being a part owner of a manufacturing company over in Bettendorf, and having served on the Pleasant Valley School Board, where we've had to make tough decisions, where we've had to use our taxpayers' dollars as effectively and efficiently as possible. And so it's that experience that I'm going to take to Washington, D.C. To really control spending, if you will, Dean.
And that's been a big part of your campaign, and I'll talk about that a little bit later when you because I heard you yesterday extolling the benefits of having a balanced budget. But – you know, these are billions of dollars in expenditures that we hadn't planned on as a nation that are going to have to be spent now. So if you're going to balance the budget at the same time that you're extending help, as you say, to the northeastern United States, something's got to give.
Absolutely, and there's no question. And so let's start tackling the low-hanging fruit. That's finding efficiencies within the federal government. That's eliminating some of the unnecessary programs. Just recently, there was a report conducted by, I believe it was Senator Coburn out of Oklahoma, where there are billions of dollars of savings that are out there. And again, coming from a business experience, we can make government more effective and more efficient, save taxpayers' dollars so we have money to divert when we need when natural disasters come up and we need to help those that have been impacted by natural disasters.
You speak about low-hanging fruit, and you must have something in mind, and you can see me. I'm pressing you for some specificity.
Absolutely. The report by Senator Coburn out of Oklahoma, one example, $350,000 was given to Ohio State University to help improve golfers make more putts. And the conclusion of that, Dean, was to envision a larger hole. Now, to me, that's $350,000 of taxpayers' money. Keep in mind, this is not the government's money. This is our money. This is taxpayers' dollars. That money was wasted, in my opinion. No, we have to put an end to these frivolous programs.
But $350,000, that is like a drop of tea in the bottom of the ocean.
This is a starting point, Dean. We have to have this mindset in Washington, D.C., and our politicians don't have this mindset right now, where we have to examine every dollar that we spend. In the Pleasant Valley School District in 2010, we had a brand new elementary school, the Hopewell Elementary School, that was ready to go. But because of budget considerations, because our budget was cut 10% across the board by then-Governor Chet Colver, we had to make the hard decision not to staff that school. And so we had an asset, a brand new elementary school that sat idle for 1 year while we made it through these tough budgetary times.
Let's talk about Amtrak then, another federal expenditure along with the state partnership with Illinois. There's a proposal, as you know, and our listeners are just trying to background anybody who might be listening that hasn't heard about this, for extending Amtrak rail service from Chicago to the Quad Cities and on to Iowa City and Des Moines possibly. As you're looking forward as a potential congressman to encouraging that state and federal partnership, I assume you're encouraging it, and then riding the train, would you be voting for federal dollars there?
Not at this time, Dean. I've come out and said that as much as I personally would like a high-speed rail service from the Quad Cities to Chicago, from Iowa City to Chicago, as much as my wife would like a high-speed rail service from the Quad Cities to Chicago so she can go shopping in downtown Chicago, you know, we have to make these hard decisions. And when we have a $1.1 trillion deficit, that means we're spending $1.1 trillion more than we're bringing in, and we're adding that deficit to an already crushing $16 trillion debt. It's these hard decisions that I think Iowans have an appetite for. Iowans have been out in front of this spending spree that Washington has been on for the last several years. We might have to delay projects 1 year or 2 years, much like we did with that elementary school in the Pleasant Valley School District.
But it's kind of hard decisions if it's not impinging something that I want, and a lot of people in the 2nd District want Amtrak. It wouldn't be very popular to be a congressman and voting against that.
Well, I hope that I'm elected, and I hope I'm rewarded for fixing things. You know, there's enough blame to go around in Washington, D.C. The Republicans can blame the Democrats. The Democrats can blame the Republicans. I have two children. Henry is 6 and Beatrice is 3. They get in fights all the time. Henry blames Beatrice. Beatrice blames Henry. But at the end of the day, that John Deere toy tractor that they've been playing with is broken. And who fixes it? Dad has to fix it. I want to be rewarded for fixing what's broken in Washington, D.C., not for creating new departments or new entitlement programs, Dean.
Well, during that speech in Davenport yesterday, and I referred to it earlier, you blasted Congress for not balancing the federal budget with revenue matching expenditures. Well, if you're going to do that, seems to me that means raising taxes to increase revenue. I mean, that's just smart.
Well, not at this time, Dean. I think it's been proven that we can actually lower the tax rate. And keep in mind, what we have to do is we have to grow this economy. Right now, we're growing at an anemic 1.3 or 1.8% GDP. That's absolutely terrible. So what we have to do is we have to grow this economy. And how do we grow the economy? We grow the economy by providing those employers, those businesses, certainty. Right now, because of this dysfunctional Congress, Siemens in Fort Madison has laid off over 400 individuals because of the uncertainty with respect to that wind energy production tax credit. As we've been out on the campaign trail, we've sat down across the desks from business owners, from CEOs, and it's the same punchline. John, we're not hiring. We're not growing this economy because of the uncertainty with respect to the regulatory environment, the uncertainty with respect to the taxes. We don't know what the tax rate's going to become 1 January of next year because of this dysfunction in the United States Congress right now.
I'm going to use that word later on, dysfunctional Congress, because I've heard you say that before. But so really what I hear you saying is I believe we can balance the federal budget expenditures and revenue by cutting out what you said earlier, unnecessary expenditures, without bringing in any additional revenue.
Well, you lower the tax rates on individuals and corporations. You allow them to hire individuals. Individuals then pay more taxes into this system. And I'm not sitting here telling your listeners that there will not come a time that I might vote to raise taxes. But not right now in this fragile economy as we're recovering from one of the worst economic recessions in this country's history.
In that speech yesterday to the crowd before Governor Romney spoke, you also, and this gets back to the television advertising, and you made a brief reference to Congressman Loebsack and a television ad that he's running. It says approved by me, so I assume that he's running it. You said he's committed a fatal mistake. Those are your words. By drawing your employer, Deere & Company, into the campaign. You're referring to that campaign commercial that says your employer, without naming Deere, they don't name Deere, is shipping jobs overseas, and that you're responsible because you're a part of the corporate management. Why are you calling that a fatal mistake?
Well, John Deere is one of the largest employers in the state of Iowa. Southeast Iowa, as we've traveled this second district here in Southeast Iowa, we have seen hundreds if not thousands of green and yellow tractors and combines, especially this time of year. I'm very proud to have worked at John Deere for the past 12 years. You just don't attack John Deere here in the second district of Iowa and think you're going to get away with it. And let's take a little deeper examination of that attack ad. Allegedly, in 1998 and 1999 is when my employer shipped those jobs to Mexico. I wasn't even with the company at that time. I started with John Deere in 2000. And so I find it very disingenuous that I could be associated with a company for taking an action when I wasn't even associated with that company. I was clerking for an Illinois Supreme Court justice in Springfield, Illinois. The ad's mostly false, Dean.
There's another ad, I think that, and you've brought it up in debates too, you're challenging Congressman Loebsack's effectiveness and the overall job approval of Congress in itself. So let me hear what you have to say about the dysfunctional Congress.
Well, Congress has an approval rating of 20% right now, and my opponent's been in Congress for 6 years. The Des Moines Register has reported that he's the most ineffective member of the Iowa delegation. 8 influential political insiders from both Des Moines and in Washington, D.C., and it was confirmed by 20 more political insiders that Congressman Loebsack is, in fact, the most ineffective member of the Iowa delegation. Just recently, the Gazette endorsed our candidacy. Congressman Loebsack's own paper has endorsed our candidacy, believing that there needs to be real change in Washington, D.C., and a new set of eyes, a fresh set of eyes, some new ideas, somebody who has business experience to tackle the fiscal problems that this country faces.
You know, Governor Romney has gotten a lot of attention because he was specific in saying one thing that he would cut. During the debates, he referred to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Is that something on your radar, too? Because that has Big Bird, and it's and a Corporation for Public Broadcasting also is public radio.
Right. Well, we have to take a look at a lot of these programs. And this campaign really is what we're talking about and what we've been talking about on the campaign trail is big ideas. When you start talking about Big Bird, attacking personal attacks against Governor Romney, personal attacks against myself, we're above that, Dean, and I think Iowans here in the second district are above that as well. You know, we need to stop these personal attacks, as Governor Romney has said, and as I've said on the campaign trail. It's time to put the blame behind us. We need to start reaching across the aisle, working in a bipartisan way, and I've done that, negotiating contracts on behalf of John Deere, negotiating and approving contracts with the teachers union in the Pleasant Valley School District. You know, we need to put this partisan politics behind us and come together and fix what's wrong with Washington, D.C.
You've used the word dysfunctional here today, and also I've heard you do it in debates and otherwise out on the campaign trail. But it comes down to, you know, Congressman Lobsack says, he admits too, it's a dysfunctional Congress. So it really comes down to who's going to be most effective in fixing what both of you admit is dysfunctional Congress, a newcomer, one of 235, or someone who's been there for 6 years and knows the ropes?
Well, he's been there for 6 years, and the Congress is still dysfunctional. A newcomer, a new fresh set of eyes, and again, I refer to what the Gazette has said. My opponent's own paper in his backyard has endorsed us because it's time for a new set of eyes, fresh ideas, to reach across the aisle, to get things done. And the first thing that we're going to do on November 8th, after we take a day of rest on November 7th, is pick up the phone and start calling our new colleagues to build those relationships, to build the trust that just doesn't exist in Washington, D.C. So come 1 January of next year, we need to hit the ground running because we don't have a minute to wait to tackle these very, very difficult issues that we face.
One of the biggest points of contention, as I've been able to observe your campaign, is in free trade agreements. It's the biggest difference of opinion that I can see you have with Congressman Lobsack. And we'll ask him about that when we question him during the second part of today's program. But generally, he's been saying that there's a difference between fair trade and it's free trade and free ideas in trading. Generally, I'm trying to paraphrase there. So where is the difference between the two of you? Because you say fair trade, and he's saying, he and labor unions are saying, that costs us jobs.
Well, keep in mind, he refers to the trade agreements that were recently signed by the president, the free trade agreement with South Korea, with Panama and Colombia. He refers to these as NAFTA-style free trade agreements. I take exception to that. NAFTA was back in 1992. We don't live in a static environment. We live in a very dynamic world. And by my opponents voting against these free trade agreements, these three free trade agreements, was a vote against jobs here in Southeast Iowa.
Governor, the term he uses is fair trade, not free trade.
Well, I don't know what he means by fair trade. If, in fact, China is manipulating the system or South Korea manipulates the system or if Panama manipulates the system, then yes, there are recourses. There's a process in place that we can use against those countries. But keep in mind, Dean, these free trade agreements with South Korea, this was backed by the United Auto Workers. The agreements between Panama and Colombia, supported by the UFCW, signed into law by President Obama, supported by former Governor Vilsack, stating that these free trade agreements would create thousands of new jobs all across America and thousands of jobs for Iowa. And he voted against jobs for Iowans. That's a thumb in the eye of every hardworking Iowan who's struggling today.
But I think that his argument is, and we'll ask him about that in the second part of the hour, is that free trade maybe creates a cost of labor imbalance that eliminates manufacturing jobs. And doesn't that concern you? Because you're part of a corporation that manufactures jobs in, I think, Ottumwa, Davenport, and Ankeny in your district.
Well, Ottumwa and Davenport, absolutely. Ankeny's not in the district. But
yes, that's right.
But I get back to The United Auto Workers supported this free trade agreement with South Korea. If they were extremely concerned about jobs, about losing jobs to South Korea, they would not have come out in support of this agreement. Now, again, the president signed these trade agreements, and former Governor Vilsack, our current Ag Secretary Vilsack, supported these free trade agreements. Keep in mind, 95% of the world's consumers live outside of the United States. So it is it's inherent that we have these trade agreements in place to open up new markets, not only to manufacturers who are in the 2nd District of Iowa, but also to our agricultural exports. So our farmers have new markets to sell their commodities into.
You're speaking about farmers. I want to talk about the Farm Bill. That's 80% supplemental food program, and the remaining 20% is support for farmers in producing food, fiber, and gasohol, if you will.
Sure.
If that's the case, shouldn't the food stamp part of that bill be separated from the Farm Bill itself?
That's part of the problem in Congress right now. It's you're exactly right. We have massive pieces of legislation, 2,700 pages of the Affordable Care Act, 2,000 pages of the burdensome banking regulation, Dodd-Frank. You know, we keep doing the same thing over and over again by passing these massive pieces of legislation. Let's try to break this out. Let's try to break the Farm Bill, the 20% that you talk about, out from the 80% of the SNAP, the food portion of this.
Because you're very critical of food stamps.
Well, I don't want to say I'm very critical of food stamps. What we need to do is we've got a real problem here in America where 1 in 6 Americans, almost 50 million Americans, Dean, are on food stamps. So there are people who are on food stamps due to no fault of their own and need the program. So we have to make sure that that program is there for them.
But hasn't that been because of the down economy?
Oh, absolutely. So we need to grow this economy again. And that's what I'm talking about. The way to grow this economy is through providing certainty for businesses, small, large businesses, so they can go out and invest and create the jobs that are needed.
You mentioned a bit on the school board?
Yeah, the Pleasant Valley School
Pleasant
Board.
Pleasant Valley School Board. No Child Left Behind, federal legislation. As a school board member, you understand education and what should be done about the federal role in assuring well-educated, globally competitive workforce, because No Child Left Behind hasn't been really popular.
That's right, and I believe Congressman Lobsack voted for No Child Left Behind. My plan is to engage education at the primary level. That's empowering parents and teachers to make the best decisions for students at the most local or the primary level. Now, there is a role for the federal government. It's very, very limited, in my opinion, and that role could be as a repository for best practices. We've been very fortunate in the Pleasant Valley School District that we have one of the best academic programs and athletic programs in the state of Iowa.
So you say No Child Left Behind should be repealed?
Absolutely, Dean.
Iran, let's go overseas just for a moment. Do you support military action to prevent Iran from achieving a nuclear weapon inventory?
Yes, I do. Boots on the ground, probably not at this time. But under no circumstances should we allow Iran to obtain a nuclear weapon that could threaten the United States, could threaten our closest ally in the region, Israel. So we must do everything in our power to prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon. And if military intervention is needed, we must take that military intervention.
And that's U.S. boots on the ground in Iran if necessary.
Absolutely not at this time.
Yes.
Not at this
time. If necessary.
If necessary, I would vote to send U.S. Troops into Iran to stop their nuclear program. But I think there's other ways in which we can do that through the technology that we have available.
Just in a quick second, who in Iowa's congressional delegation do you most philosophically align with, Steve King or Tom Latham?
Tom Latham.
Got it. Thank you very much for being our guest today. We've been talking with Republican candidate for Congress in Iowa's 2nd Congressional District, John Archer. River to River continues. I'm Dean Borg, now with Congressman Dave Lobsack, who has been representing another district other than the one that he's running in right now. In fact, he moved from Mount Vernon into Iowa City to be in the newly created 2nd District, which is by and large southeast Iowa, but stretching all the way over to the Newton area, including Pella and Knoxville and all those Grinnell and cities along the way, and Iowa City, where you live. Hello, Congressman Lobsack.
Thanks, Dean.
Edge of the news. Go ahead.
Yeah, if I might just say something about the district, I appreciate that, Dean. It actually goes all the way down to Lamoni, and it stretches from Clinton in the northeast to Lamoni in the southwest. But it actually encompasses 14 of the original 15 districts that I've represent or counties that I've represented for the last 6 years. The only one that doesn't is Lynn, and of course that necessitated the move to Johnson County.
So what you're saying, I'm not a carpetbagger in moving into this.
Well, what
district.
I'm saying is that 54% of the current district I've represented for the last 6 years, and as a native Iowan and someone who went to Iowa State, actually probably shouldn't mention it here at Iowa City, but I'm very familiar with the new parts of the district. I've been around the state a lot over the course of my adult life, so I feel very comfortable with it.
Congressman Lobsack, the edge of the news right now is what's happening on the East Coast.
Right.
The hurricane raking New York, New Jersey, all the way into Michigan, but right. Big damage along the eastern seaboard. That adds to the list of disaster relief and rebuilding that the federal government is helping with in various disasters around the nation. How will these needs change some of the priorities if you're reelected?
As far as I'm concerned, my priorities have to remain with the 2nd District of Iowa. Our hearts go out to those folks. They're in our thoughts and in our prayers, and they should be. Moving forward here over the course of the next several weeks and months and possibly even years, depending on the extent of the damage. But we know about that. We know about that because of what happened here in 2008. And, of course, as you know, I've worked very hard to make sure that we're made whole here in this area. Just recently, we got a very good decision from the undersecretary from the Department of Homeland Security, something that I worked really hard on to make sure that Iowa City and the University of Iowa does, in fact, get what is coming to this area. And I'm very happy with that decision. None of those things that have happened in the past, those decisions that have been made in the past, should be affected any way whatsoever by what's happening on the East Coast. But we've got to make sure that those folks are taken care of as well.
But people will say, we don't have the money. We are borrowing money the way it is, and now we've got more expenses. If we were running a household account, that's the way we'd look at it.
Well, when it comes to disasters, it's something that has not been predicted, is not predictable. Although I do believe that we need to change how we budget. I think we should have a particular part of the federal budget specifically for disasters and make it more part of the regular budget process.
What do you mean, a rainy day fund?
Just a line item in the budget, if you will, a part of the budget to make sure that the Department of Homeland Security, FEMA, actually doesn't have to, you know, rely upon some kind of emergency disaster assistance. We've got to regularize the process because we know we're going to have disasters and we have to plan for that.
You were recently endorsed by two newspapers in the newly drawn 2nd Congressional District that we've described, Quad City Times, Davenport area, Bettendorf, mm-hmm. in that region, listed your support for initiatives like Amtrak,
right.
To the Quad Cities, and then on over to Iowa City and eventually on to Des Moines, I think is the way it's envisioned, and the Interstate 74 bridge
right.
funding. Why do you think that, why did you think and continue to think those are worthy efforts?
Well, on Amtrak, I rode the rails with former Governor Culver, actually, to talk to folks in those communities along the way. The local chambers of commerce all along the way are in favor, especially here in Iowa City, but in the Quad Cities as well, in favor of making certain that we have Amtrak extended to Iowa City and on to Des Moines all the way to Omaha. It's very important. We have a lot of college students here at the University of Iowa from Chicago who would access that service.
Even if it doesn't pay its own way? Even if it has to have a federal subsidy?
I think it's very important. If you talk to folks from the chambers of commerce, and normally, as you know, the Chamber of Commerce, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, is very concerned about exactly the issue that you're talking about. But in this case, they understand that it's important for economic development. They understand it's good for the regions. And so I understand that as well. My opponent is for privatizing Amtrak. I think that's the wrong way to go. The Quad City Times understands how important that is for the area. They understand how important that I-74 bridge is. They understand how important the Rock Island Arsenal is. All those things that I've been working on over the course of the last year and a half and actually getting things done for them as well.
You've talked about privatizing, and you are against privatizing Amtrak.
I am. Mm-hmm.
Because why shouldn't it stand on its own?
It is standing on its own. Obviously, it does receive a subsidy, but that's for the good of the communities in the area. As I said, the chambers of commerce are all behind this. Those folks are standing behind this, and those local communities are standing behind this. This is really important, and it's important for those areas.
But philosophically, there's a difference because Republicans, very conservative Republicans now in Congress, you're serving with many of them in the House of Representatives, are saying the federal government can no longer be the sugar daddy.
It shouldn't be. There's no doubt about it. We've got to have a balanced budget amendment, for example, and I've signed on to a balanced budget amendment. I helped craft one, a Republican colleague of mine from Michigan, and I helped craft a balanced budget amendment. I was the first Democrat in the U.S. House to sign on to that. I voted for a balanced budget amendment. There's no doubt the American people, Iowans, people in my district are telling me that Congress and President, they have to get their act together, and we've got to get the deficit under control and pay down on our national debt. There's no doubt about that.
But you haven't been able to agree on a budget for how many years? 3 years?
Oh, no, more than that, because of this excessive partisanship that, as you know, everyone knows exists in Washington, D.C. That's why I've been trying to work across the aisle with my colleagues on any number of issues, and I think successfully, bringing them to my side on certain things, having to do with jobs. I go to their side. I was one of 18 Democrats who voted with Eric Cantor, one of the Republican leaders, on a bill that would cut small business taxes. This is something that I'm willing to do, that I have a demonstrated record doing. My opponent says he'll be bipartisan. He's called this president an imperial president. This is not the way that we're going to get things done. Name-calling like that is not going to create a situation where we can work with each other across the aisle.
But you haven't maybe directly called a person a derogatory term, but you have Congress as an entity.
Right.
You've said it's dysfunctional, and yet
it is.
You're part of it.
Of course. It is dysfunctional. There's no way around it. That can't be argued. That's why Congress is at 11% approval rating.
Yeah, but if people reelect you to go back, I mean, why should they expect anything different?
Because I have a demonstrated record of working with folks across the aisle, as I just mentioned, on any number of bills that I've already voted on, that I've already introduced. And, for example, let me give you an example of where folks on the other side of the aisle trust me and they know that I'm willing to work with them. A good friend of mine, a Republican, came to me one of the last days that we were in session before John Boehner sent Congress back to do the campaigning. And he approached me and asked me if I would sign on to a bill as the lead Democrat, which would – because he knows that I'm for veterans. He understands that I'm for folks, you know, on Social Security and what have you. This bill would – put aside the 5-month waiting period for wounded warriors who qualify for Social Security disability. This is the kind of thing that I've been doing. They understand that on the other side of the aisle. They come to me because they know that I'm open-minded, and I go to them and get them on my side when I need them.
Those are things you have been doing, and yet you still call Congress dysfunctional. I don't want to belabor this.
We need more folks there who are willing to do the things that I've been willing to do the last 6 years, and my opponent is not willing to do that if you look at his record and what he said about his opponent, what he said about me, and what he said about the president.
Do you think that trust can be restored?
I think that it can be. I'm not going to be a Pollyanna about this, as I like to say, Dean. But at the same time, if we don't have folks who go to Washington, D.C., and who are willing to put down their partisan arms, as I have been, and work with the other side, then, of course, there's never going to be any progress in Washington, D.C. But I'm asking folks to look at my record, see what I've done, and judge both my opponent and me on the basis of my record and his statements, and hopefully they'll vote for me in the end.
And you speak about your record, and we have to put something that maybe is a bit embarrassing out on the table here, and you know what I'm going to say.
Sure.
What is it?
The Des Moines Register, right? Yeah, that article. Yeah, thanks, Dean. It's not embarrassing at all. I'm quite proud of my record, as a matter of fact.
Well, let's tell those who are listening and don't know what we're talking about here. The Des Moines Register, in a ranking of the effectiveness of Iowa's congressional delegation, ranked you 7th out of 7.
Right.
Why do you think they came to that conclusion?
I think it's because they talked to inside the Beltway Des Moines pundits and Washington, D.C. pundits, people I don't pay attention to, people apparently my opponent pays attention to. I pay attention to the people in my district. I pay attention to folks who are actually covering me and covering all the things that I've done for my district. Those are the folks I pay attention to. When I went to Washington, D.C. in 2006, I made a conscious decision not to pay attention to those pundits in Washington, D.C. I don't need to go on MSNBC or Fox or CNN. In fact, the people who do that, I believe, are actually the least effective people because they have difficulty working with their colleagues unlike what I do.
If we talk about effectiveness, what do you, in the 6 years that you've been in Congress, what's your greatest accomplishment?
You know what I feel that I've done the most for is our military and our veterans. I have expanded myself. I have expanded the post 9/11 GI Bill for over 1,200 Iowans who are in the Garden Reserve, over 85,000 Americans in the Garden Reserve. And I got an award from the Enlisted Association of the National Guard of the U.S. for that. I accomplished on a bipartisan basis while I was in the minority a provision in the law which allows our National Guard to embed a mental health provider in every single unit stateside pre- and post-deployment. I took a lead role in making sure on the education front that we expanded Pell Grants, the amount of money that goes to people who like I was when I was growing up, of very modest or no means, so that those folks can access education and achieve the American dream. Keep those interest rates low as well for those student loans. Those are the kinds of things that I've been working for, that I've been accomplishing.
Your opponent, and I want to also broaden this to a discussion of the Farm Bill, but let's just talk about one segment of what we call the Farm Bill,
sure.
That is supplemental food. And we have known it as food stamps. I think it's called the SNAP
program
now.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But your opponent cites growing food stamp or SNAP recipient lists, thousands, millions. More mm-hmm. in the last 4 years. Is that supported by you?
It's a problem that we have so many people on food stamps, but it's a reflection of the economic decline that we've had. And we're just beginning to have a recovery, but of course it's a reflection of that. And food security is absolutely essential. I grew up in poverty myself. My mom was on food stamps some of the time when we were growing up because she was a single parent who had mental illness and struggled with mental illness and couldn't hold down a job.
It may be also expanding of the eligibility limits for qualifying for food stamps too, not just the economic downturn.
It's both, as a matter of fact. But once we get the economy turned around, we get people back to work, then we're going to see a contraction in the demand for those as well. So I'm confident that we're going to contract the demand for food stamps as the economy gets back on its feet and as folks get a job.
And you would support that. Let's tighten up the eligibility for food stamps.
In fact, what's happened, if you've noticed, in the Senate, the Farm Bill that was passed on a bipartisan basis, in the House, the Farm Bill that was passed out of the Ag Committee on a bipartisan basis, in fact, finds exactly those kinds of savings in that SNAP program, in that food stamp program.
You mean the Senate bill does, the House
The House cuts more.
That's right.
That's exactly right.
Yes. Well, given that food stamps or the SNAP supplemental food program mm-hmm. is about 80% of what we call the Farm Bill, do you think those two should be separated and the farm supports stands on its own, crop insurance and things like that, as legislation, and supplemental food stands on its own as separate legislation? Should they be separated?
Well, I'm open to solutions as to how to get a farm bill passed in the first place. As far as I can tell in Washington, D.C., there's no one in a leadership position who favors that.
That's not going to happen.
No, the problem is that what we have is the House Majority Leadership, Speaker Boehner, who simply refuses to bring that House Farm Bill passed on a bipartisan basis out of the Agriculture Committee to a vote in the House. I led the charge here, the Iowa delegation, in July into early August to get a disaster relief bill on the floor of the House of Representatives. It was already part of the Farm Bill passed in the Ag Committee. But unfortunately, Speaker Boehner refused to do that. And I mentioned, as you know, in Iowa Press, I said to my opponent, when you're with Speaker Boehner at the Davenport Country Club, you should pressure him to make sure that he gets that bill on the floor of the House of Representatives because there's bipartisan support to get that bill on the floor.
If we're talking about agriculture, we talk about trade mm-hmm. and free trade. There's a difference between you and your opponent, John Archer, in free trade agreements.
Right.
You
definitely
are more conservative in free trade.
Well, what I'm for is fair trade, not necessarily free trade. Free trade is wonderful in theory, but I have to represent 762,000 people in this second district of Iowa. I have to take into account the interests of all those folks. And NAFTA, as you know, which was passed in 1994, cost 11,000 jobs in Iowa.
That's the North American Free Trade Agreement.
That's right. And my opponent criticizes me for voting against three NAFTA-style so-called free trade agreements. I voted against those agreements because I have a concern that they're going to cost jobs just as NAFTA did.
And labor unions are generally aligned with you.
Well, that's true. In the case of the Korea Free Trade Agreement, my opponent has misstated the facts on that. The UAW was in favor of that, United Food and Commercial Workers were, but not in favor of the other two. But it doesn't matter to me who's in favor of these or who's opposed to these. The President of the United States was in favor of these. I have to look out for the interests of people in the 2nd District of Iowa. Those are the people I talk to, whichever group they may be in.
And your opponent also criticizes you for an ad that you're running which seems to draw the corporate entity of John Deere
sure.
into this campaign for, and he's a corporate attorney for John Deere, but draws John Deere into moving jobs overseas. In fact, he talked about that at a campaign rally for Governor Romney, Republican nominee Romney, in Davenport
right.
yesterday.
And by the way, I'm proud to work at John Deere. My opponent may have made a fatal mistake in attacking that great company. And yes, there's a Caterpillar dozer over there.
Right. Yeah, here's the thing. In my ad, that is not about John Deere or any particular company. That's about the differences between me and my opponent when it comes to these so-called free to trade agreements or when it comes to policies that encourage and incentivize companies to take jobs overseas. He's in favor of those policies. I'm opposed to those policies. He's hiding behind the fact that he's for policies that are going to take jobs overseas, that are going to push jobs overseas. That's the bottom line. He can talk all he wants about the company that he works for. I happen to be a native Iowan. I happen to have grown up in Iowa, and I had a John Deere toy when I was growing up, and I have one proudly displayed in my office in Washington, D.C. John Deere is a great company. This isn't about them. This is about the policy differences between my opponent and me, and he's for policies that will encourage and incentivize companies to take jobs overseas. We have to have policies that will encourage them to bring those jobs back and keep those jobs here.
But even though he has called it and did in his speech yesterday, a fatal mistake by you in drawing John Deere in, that people might misinterpret that.
Well, they might if he has his way, certainly, because he's hiding behind the fact that he thinks that this is all about a particular company. No, it's about his policies and what he stands for. And when folks in the 2nd District of Iowa know his policies, they are not going to vote for my opponent.
Let's quickly go to education. And I do that because I know that you have an interest. Your wife, Terry, is a retired elementary school teacher.
Right.
No Child Left Behind is getting a lot of waivers across the country now because it's a prescription by the federal government for how schools should perform. Do you support No Child Left Behind, or do you support something different?
I support the goals of No Child Left Behind. We all want every child to succeed. I think the waiver process is a good idea because there are unrealistic goals in No Child Left Behind. States are not all going to be able to reach those goals by 2014. What we have to have is something that replaces No Child Left Behind that provides for far more flexibility for states, for localities, for teachers, for parents, for administrators. That's what we need, and there are a variety of things that we can do in terms of multiple measures of achievement instead of one high-stakes exam allowed under the new law, wherever, whenever that law may be adopted. We've got to make sure, for example, too, that we don't look at different groups of students, that we look at the same group of students over time, longitudinal studies, things like that that allow more flexibility.
I got a couple of more questions, and we're getting toward the end of our discussion here, but Iran moving toward possibly nuclear weapon capacity. Mm-hmm. Under what circumstances would you support the United States entering, given the fact that Israel may take action, supporting Israel in military action against Iran? Would you support that?
Well, as a member, especially as a member of the House Armed Services Committee, I honestly do not engage in those kinds of hypotheticals. I mean, Israel is our most important ally in the region. Iran cannot be allowed to have a nuclear weapons capability.
But not hypothetical then. Do you support at all the U.S. getting involved militarily?
We can never take military options off the table, but all of the experts, all the generals, all the diplomats, all the intelligence folks tell me and are telling members of Congress that we have to let those sanctions continue. They are biting. They are taking hold. That's what we have to do.
Which of Iowa's congressional delegation, I'm just trying to give voters a perspective
sure.
of you, even though you say they're well acquainted with me anyway, but among the Democratic legislators in Congress, who do you most closely identify with from Iowa? Is it Congressman Braley or is it Congressman Boswell?
Well, I can't pick favorites for a lot of reasons, as you might imagine, but I happen to be friends with all of them, and I will tell you that Leonard Boswell and I have gotten to know each other very well in the last 6 years, and I have tremendous respect for him, but I do for all of them, and my sincere hope is that four of us will get either reelected or elected for the first time to the U.S. House of Representatives this year.
And do you support keeping post offices in every little town in Iowa?
I think we have to do the best we can to provide that service to as many communities as we can. This is an area that my opponent, for example, demonstrated that he's out of touch. He's for, you know, all these efficiencies, which we all want, but we cannot deprive our senior citizens and our local small businesses in those communities of that service. There's simply no way around this. I'm from Iowa. I understand. I've been to these communities. I understand how important they are. I'm not going to ask a senior to drive 25 miles for a P.O. box very far from her home, or a local cottage industry who relies on that post office. I'm not going to ask them to go 25 or 30 miles so they can pick up their mail. It doesn't make any sense. If someone knows anything about rural Iowa, that's not acceptable.
Congressman Wolfsack, thanks very much for being our guest.
As always, Dean, thank you. I appreciate it.
River to River is produced by Catherine Perkins and Emily Woodbury. Caitlin Fry and Dennis Reese provided production assistance today. Podcasting and on-demand audio of River to River are always available at iowapublicradio.org. I'm Dean Borg. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.